And it's KVC Arts Now on KVCR, Arts and Entertainment, as well as the people and places providing it. I'm David Fleming. Maurice Williams passed away August 6th, 2024, at the age of 86. Williams started singing at an early age and recording while still in his teens in the latter part of the 1950s. Most certainly the biggest hit for Maurice Williams and the Zodiacs was Stay. And we'll hear more about it a bit later. It really is a plea to let this date last just a little bit longer. The song I'm going into the show with is one that many know, though chances are they know the version done by the Diamonds. But here's the original, recorded and released by the Gladiolas and written by a 16-year-old Maurice Williams. As we go through this conversation, there's going to be references to the Gladiolas, the Royal Charms, even the Zodiacs. We'll try to hit these names as they happened in your history, but going way back, can you tell us about the Junior Harmonizers? And this, I suppose, does go back to the beginning, huh?
Yeah, the very beginning. We were in church, and we formed it out of the church choir. We had got us a little quartet group. It was, I think, four of us from the church choir. We played church to churches. That's how that got started.
And then you became the Royal Charms at some point, so I'd love to hear about Little Darling. Not to be confused with the Neil Hefti jazz tune, Little Darling. I'd like to hear about you bluffing your way into an audition at the age of, what, 15 or 16 or so?
16. Yeah, we had been listening to a program on Nashville, Tennessee radio called WLAC, and there was this little guy, and they would be selling little baby chicks and what have you, stuff like that on WLAC, and playing mostly rhythm and blues at the time. They were playing that, and the guy that was on, he was working for Ernie Young at Excella Nashville Records, and he would talk about them because they were sponsoring the show. So I gave Mr. Young a call, and I told him that we would like to audition. He said, well, if you're ever in the area, you can call me and come by the studio and audition. I said, well, we'll be over there next month. We didn't have no job, no gig. He said, okay, we'll come by. So I called John Arnold, the disc jockey, and he said he would meet us and take us to the studio. My buddy Willie Jones had a beat-up old Chrysler for slick tires, not a spare.
Oh, my.
And we jumped in there, and William Massey, the guy that I wrote Little Darling for to sing, because he was the lead singer at the time, his mother wouldn't let him go. So, y'all crazy. She wouldn't let him go. Mm. But we went anyway and prayed all the way there, and we got there. No problems. We got there and met John R., and he took us over to meet Ernie Young out at Nashville Records. We played him all the songs, and one of the guys said, well, why don't you play him the song you wrote for Bunchy? That was his nickname, called Little Darling. I said, well, he's not here to sing it. They said, well, you wrote it. You can sing it. And I said, okay. I did that, and he loved it.
Nice.
And he said, let's spice it up. So he put some castanets and make it like a, what you call it?
Oh, like a calypso thing.
Yeah, that's what he said. And he said, chop your lyric on it. And so I did that, what he said, and it came out like that.
Nice.
He loved it, and he took that and a few more, and that's how I got started on that Little Darling.
Excellent. Wasn't it also Ernie that convinced you guys to become the Gladiolas then at this point? Now we've got one of the first name shifts.
Yeah, he did. He said, because there's a lot of groups named the Royals, the Five Royals, for you this story about. And he loved the flower gladiola, and he named the gladiolus from that flower he loved.
Simple as that. Wow, nice.
Simple as that.
Wow.
Yep.
Well, with Little Darling, when the Diamonds took the song higher on the charts, I read that Ernie told you that since you were the writer of the song, all you should really care about, not so much the other group's success, is rather that all you should care about is that it sells and gets played, and not whose version sells. And this gave you some early lessons. You were maybe only 16 or 17 maybe at this point?
I was 16. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he told me they'd start teaching me about publishing. And wherein he could have had the song, because all we wanted to do was make a record. He could have had the song and the royalties, the whole ballgame. But he didn't take it from me. He started teaching me about publishing and business at an early age. And I never forget, he was a Christian-hearted man. And he did all that for me, and I still have my song to this day, you know.
To this day.
And the Diamonds version went to number 2 on the charts.
Mm-hmm.
As Dave Somerville used to say, because of that dang Elvis, which moved off the number 1 spot, so we got number 2. And Gladiola's version went up on the Rhythm and Blues chart, so I forget where it hit at.
It hit, though.
It was
though,
big.
Yeah.
That came about.
That was great to see that going up on various charts. And it's also fantastic, kind of a rarity at this point, that Young did leave you with full rights as the songwriter, not trying
yes.
to take it away. So that's
phenomenal.
That
wasn't happening back then.
Yeah. I read that you earned a music scholarship to Allen University, but you had to turn it down. You were just actually performing too much. This would have really interrupted your career at this point.
Yeah, at the time I got the scholarship, we had a chance to go to L.A. and perform. So I talked to my mother and everybody in the family, and they said, go to L.A., you know, because that's your career. And they were always with me 100%, my family.
Beautiful.
And so we didn't do the scholarship thing, and the principal that had gotten it for me, he said, are you making a mistake? He cursed me out.
Mm.
I was a young kid. So that music ain't never gonna go nowhere. I ain't looked back yet. He was mad because I didn't take him up on it, you know. And so I went to L.A. and then from there we've been going.
I had a similar conversation with Judy Collins because she took piano lessons when she was 12, and years later, when she was a success worldwide, her old classical music teacher said, "Judy, you really could have been somebody if you just stayed with the piano." So this is when you guys ended up leaving Excello, and that meant that you had to give up the name, the Gladiolas. And this could have been difficult for a group, but the quote here, and this is a striking quote, it's simple too, a name and a song, that made it easy for you guys. And so you were able to then become another group, and this is, I think, interesting. How did the Zodiacs come about as a name for a group?
Well, first of all, Mr. Young say was that you're not going to sign with me anymore. I need to take my name back. And he did that, the Gladiolas. So we was out there without a name. And so one particular time, we were in Bluefield, West Virginia, in our station wagon, and it broke down on us. And we had to go to a dealership. And in that dealership, basically, I went over and saw a car called the Zodiac. He came to me and said, what do you think about the name Zodiac? I said, it's fine with me. So we took the name Zodiac off a car. Now I heard it was a Ford made in Europe somewhere.
Okay.
So we took the name off that car and called ourselves Zodiac. And my manager at the time said, need to name it Maurice Williams and the Zodiac. So if that name thing come about again, they can't take your name.
Oh,
you
nice.
You can always have Maurice Williams. So we called it Maurice Williams and the Zodiac. And so that came about.
That's fantastic, you know, because I've talked with so many people who have been, like, you know, say part of the Coasters or the Drifters or a lot of those groups, and the name transferred from person to person to person, but nobody's going to be Maurice Williams but you.
That's it.
Beautiful.
That's what he was talking about. So that was some good advice.
Incredibly so.
For that.
Daddy don't mind, and your mommy don't mind.
You were the Zodiacs at this point. I'm going to be addressing the song Stay. If you could tell me about that summer day recording in a Quonset hut on Shakespeare Road in Columbia. And it's my understanding that possibly the biggest hit for the Zodiacs was one of the last tracks recorded that day. Can we hear about this day?
Yeah. We had met two guys out of Columbia, South Carolina at a fraternity party, Phil Gernhardt and John McCullough. Well, Phil was later the manager for this group, Wolf Somebody. They were very popular. And Phil passed away, and so we were looking for songs and everything, so we came up with a bunch of songs. And a little girl, a friend of the family, she said, how about that song that had a high part in it? She's about nine. And she was talking about Stay. She said, oh, I like that. So I said, wow, if she liked it, other kids gonna like it.
Nice.
So I pulled up Stay and we started doing it, and we included that and the songs for Phil and John to carry to New York. So they carried to New York, and Al Silver of Hal Ember Records, He liked Stay, and he sent it back, and he told us to make it short and sing it flat. It's kind of hard to tell guys out of Glee Club
that
A used to sing flat when we were trained to sing at key. But we did it. We made it short, and I sang best we could out of tune. And then the part that's out of tune is the beginning of Stay, when it goes boom, 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 Stay. That
just
part,
a little bit longer.
That's the part that's out of tune. We had a few little spots, and they carried it back to him, and he loved it. and everything he said came true. We got more airplay with it being short, and it sold.
Wow. To have somebody say, hey, I love the song, except it's in tune. What can you do about this?
It's in tune, and that's something nobody would know that but musicians and people in the business.
Yeah.
You know.
And now, this was recorded later in the Zodiac's career, but didn't you actually write this one due to a date you had when you were about 15?
Yeah.
She had to meet her curfew, something like that?
Yeah, the same girl I was dating. Her brother was to come by and pick her up at 10 o'clock that evening. So we were all friends of the family. Mm-hmm. And so I tried to convince her to stay a little longer. And she couldn't. He picked up and she left. The next morning, I got up on the song stage just a little bit longer.
Do you remember telling her things like, well, your mama won't mind and your daddy won't mind?
I didn't tell her that. That was in my head.
Yeah, well, maybe.
I was just sad. I did tell her, your parents won't mind because we were all friends of the family.
True.
But, you know, I put in a song like that.
Yep. Notable lyrics, notable. Now, and there have been quite a few covers. Do you actually have any favorites? It's your own song, but there were some nice ones. The Hollies put that out. Also, Jackson Brown made it into
My favorite was the Four Seasons.
Ah, right.
Nice. Was their arrangement.
Oh, yeah.
I was crazy about that.
Well, in this one, I read, this is an interesting bit of trivia, at a minute 36 seconds long, Stay is the shortest recording ever to reach number one on the Billboard Hot 100. So when Stay was included on the soundtrack for the film Dirty Dancing in 1987, you still have rights to the song today. And so when they were getting ready to put that onto the soundtrack, was this a thing where they had to contact you? It was just going done through your management? How does something like that work?
Publisher called me, and he said, we have a chance to stay in a movie, and it had been in some more movies, A Little Darling also, and they just got to say, what you think? I said, well, let's go for it, you know, and they said, it's a low-budget movie, it probably won't do nothing, but at least your song will be in it. So we put it in there, and to me, the musical soundtrack of Dirty Dancing made the whole movie.
Oh, yeah.
You know, because, I mean, Patrick knows that great actors and dancing, but those songs, man, they were something.
Oh, yeah.
So I say, yeah, let's do that. And so they did it, and that is what went on.
Yeah, I'd have to put that movie in with my collection of musicals, even though none of the words are sung, making it a musical. Music is just such a strong part of that movie that it just falls
it
into
is.
That category.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. I'm David Fleming in conversation with the late Maurice Williams from when he was getting ready to perform in the area as part of a wonderful doo-wop lineup. That was with Affordable Music Productions. Later, a look at a remake of Stay with a child Williams heard in church. First, though, May I. Eventually did become a million seller. But Maurice, didn't it, in your words, I think, almost sink with the ship when it went to its original publisher, VJ?
Yeah, what happened was we released it on VJ Records. And as soon as they released it, the company went out of business.
Like a couple days later, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And then he had to put on his label, which is called D2 Records. And we'll release it like that. That's what happened.
Okay, so then it did get airplay through that. And you did say that later you made it shaggable. And this is referencing not Austin Powers, but Carolina Beach Music. Can you talk to me a little bit about Carolina Beach Music? It's not such a familiar term, but it is such a recognizable thing if you're in that area.
Yeah, in the area. Yeah, well, I heard about beach music in May. I came out. It was the first time I heard the word beach music was in 1964. And that's when Maya was out. And they had the shag thing. And I saw him do it. And I said, oh, this is a remake of the Jitterbug, which it was. The dance of Jitterbug.
Okay, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's what the shag is. The same thing. Slow down, son.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. It was great.
And so to redo the tune, May I, to make it more shaggable, you talked about, what, a walking bass line. How, did you re-record the song then for this?
Yeah, it's on the album Maurice Williams and the Zodiac's 50-year anniversary album.
That's right, yeah, and I thought this one...
It's on there with a walking bass, yeah.
I did read also that you recorded some solo stuff. Is there a non-Zodiac Maurice Williams album out there, or were these recorded as singles?
I think they were singles.
Okay.
And there weren't that many.
Okay.
One or two, something like that.
This was, I guess, it would have to be at the same time that the Zodiacs, because the Zodiacs, it seems, never really stopped. But, and even at some point, didn't you expand the group to some 9 people with a horn section as a permanent lineup?
Yeah. See, I came directly out of a high school band.
Mm-hmm.
With a band, I played the trombone and the marching band and the concert band. So I was in love with horns anyway.
Yeah.
And I picked up the piano also. I play by ear to the day on the keyboard. So, yeah, I did it, and my band leader was a music teacher all his life, Calvin McKinney, but he passed away, and he had the horn section for me. It was a good sounding band. We didn't have about maybe 3 horns.
Okay.
But it was great. Those guys were so good.
Did this make it harder to tour? I mean, it gives you better, thicker textures, but there's more salaries to pay.
Yeah, it didn't make it hard. We got the price right in those days to get jobs.
Okay.
And we did.
All right. Maurice, I've spoken with various doo-wop era groups, and they all had different things to say about the British invasion. and how it affected their careers, or even whether or not it did. Some folks were like, you know what, we borrowed from each other. It didn't make no difference. But you, in one form or another of the Zodiacs, have kept performing through the years. How did the so-called British invasion affect you, if at all?
We made money on it.
Oh, yeah?
We did. When the Beatles came, we went and got us some wigs and some cardboard guitars.
Mm-hmm.
And we pretended we were the Beatles. We had a Beatles act.
Oh.
And people loved it. We heard this black guy singing, I want to build your head. And when we got to the ooh part of ooh, we would shake our heads and the wigs would go there. People loved it. So, I said, yeah, we did it together.
Oh, my God. I had not heard of this one. I've got to hear about the inception of this idea. I mean, so what, they're on Ed Sullivan. So was it after that national television appearance that you guys were like, okay, I got some wigs. I got a great idea. Or
yeah, after they got so popular here in the U.S. Yes. They said, wow, these guys are popular. So, and I liked every song they did. You know, I really did and still do. And so when they did all that and got that popular, we said, we're going to get popular with them.
Oh.
So got us some wigs.
That is a riot.
And it went over great, man. The college kids loved it. They loved it.
I hadn't read that anywhere. That is beautiful. Oh, I'm so glad. That made the conversation right there.
Man. Black Beatles.
Oh, my gosh. Black Beatles. Oh, my gosh. Was there anybody like management? Was anybody like, no, you don't want to mess with the Beatles? This is a risky move? Or was it just, hey, it's fun, let's do it?
No. They loved it.
Okay.
Because we did, I came up with acts for the group to do. We had one called Please Mr. Custer.
Please Mr. Custer.
Remember Mr. Custer?
Yeah.
And we did it at the Apollo. Not the Beatles, but we did this particular act called Please Mr. Custer, I Don't Want to Go.
Mm-hmm.
And we had a guy, Wiley Bennett, may he rest in peace, he passed. We would be singing, Please Mr. Custer, I Don't Want to Go. And it's in there where an arrow shot out and hit the guy. So Wiley Bennett was playing the part that got hit by the arrow. And when they got hit by the arrow, the drummer went, pow! And he acted that part, man, we all laughed. We laughed with the audience because he played it so perfect.
Oh,
and man, that was funny. That was one act. And then we had another one called the baseball act where we'd play baseball on the stage singing.
Really? Just
you know?
Going
and
through?
Then the Beatles came along. That was the moneymaker.
Wow.
That was something.
Oh, that is fun. This is stuff that
I never heard
of.
Fun with it. And then we played at Ray Charles, Hit the Road, yeah.
Yeah.
And Don't You Come Back. Wally would put on a pillow on his dress, on a dress, and come out with a dress on and that pillow under there. And he would be singing, Hit the Road, Jack, you ain't no good. No more, no more, no more, no more. You know, and they went crazy again. So I was doing a lot of acts.
Oh.
These were for nightclubs.
This is great. I have to tell you, too, I totally grew up on my mom's At the Hop records and whatnot. You are right in between my mom and dad's age, and so you know, their music that I grew up on and always loved it. One of the things before we wrap up here, I was looking at some videos and just whatever you can find on YouTube. Who is Luke LaBosa, a young man that you performed Stay With? I mean young, like 10 years old, a high falsetto voice.
Oh, little Luke.
Yeah.
He come to our church and sing, and it had just a nice little cute voice. I started taking him in the studio and let him sing the hop out on stage. And we did that, and it worked.
It worked.
He is so good. That video is on there now, please. I played for the church choir, and he was in church singing, and my guitar player found him, really, and brought him to my attention, and we produced him with the Stay thing, and it went over great.
Sure is.
Mm-hmm, he's cool.
You know, and that's the thing. That's what this is all about, too. It's really passing music along to another generation. It's not like concerts where there's just going to be people that were born in 1938 to 1944.
That's I grew up with my audience. We're the same age now.
But then their kids, like myself, so, you know, it's my age will be there as well.
This little girl, I'll never forget, Dirty Dancing came out.
Mm-hmm.
We did an outdoor concert, and after the show, we were doing a meet greet thing. She came up to me, she said, "Mr. Williams, can I shake the hand of the man that shook Patrick Swayze's hand?" I said, "Sure." I said, "But I didn't shake his hand, never met him before." "But I'd be glad to shake your hand. It's one good story, right?" And shook her hand. And after that, I said, "We got a new generation."
Yes.
And sure enough, we do. Thank God for Dirty Dancing.
Excellent.
Because that turned the table. Dirty Dancing, yeah.
That's got the next wave coming in, and hopefully these folks will be bringing their kids into the picture, and we're just not going to let this stuff go, because it's just too...
That's right. Keep it going. Keep it going.
Yeah. And that's exactly what Maurice Williams did until the end. Maurice Williams passed away August 6th, 2024, at the age of 86, leaving so many fond memories for so many people and passing this type of music on to the next several generations. Thanks again, of course, to Maurice Williams, as well as to Nathan Goethals of Affordable Music Productions for initially getting me in touch with Williams. Here at KVCR, thanks to Rick Dulock, Lillian Vasquez, Miley Palacios, Sandy Hodela, and Shireen Awad. I'm David Fleming, with thanks especially to you for listening and for your support, which you can do any time of the year. Go to kvcrnews.org/support. And thanks again.